Hey, Gore friends, this is Story, and we are back from a long season without having any guests. But you know what? We're coming through for you guys. We found a guest, a spectacular guest, very talented photographer, Rawl of the Dead, who's
Thank
here to
you.
join us today. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much for that intro. Appreciate it.
Of course, thank you for being here. Would you like to tell everyone which movie you chose?
The movie I chose was one of my favorite movies, one of my scariest movies, called The Exorcist. You probably heard of
Probably. It's a little movie, a little
Little.
70s flick, old school. All right, so we're gonna dive right into that. You guys stay tuned. And welcome back, Gore friends. As we said, we're going to be talking about The Exorcist. But before we get into that, let's go ahead and talk to our guests a little bit. Rawl of the Dead Instagram handle, very talented photographer, as I said earlier. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into photography and what you do now?
Well, I got into photography maybe in 2012. I was kind of into photography a little bit before that, just for my phone. And since I was always going to the horror events, Monster, Scare LA, it was pre-Midsummer Scream. I liked what everybody was wearing. Some people got really creative with makeup, costumes. So I started taking pictures of everybody and adding my own edits to them. And that's kind of how it started with doing the horror photography.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we just started experiencing our first horror conventions back in 2019. And then we were so excited to do everything in 2020, but we know how that went.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, why did you choose The Exorcist?
The Exorcist is just one of those movies that it's still scares me to this day. I don't think there's been a movie out there that comes close to that. Just the way it was done was just so serious. And it's something like I feel like could really happen, like in real life. So I wanted to pick that movie because it's just such an iconic movie, and it's something that I still try to watch at least once a year if I can, just to refresh myself on the movie. But it's still hard for me to watch it because it's still scary for me. Even till this day, and I'm an old man.
Well, I can relate. I think that's Rosemary's Baby for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I can definitely relate to that. This is actually my first time watching this movie all the way through. I've always admired the makeup and saw clips from it, but I never sat down and just watched the whole movie.
Are
So,
you talking about The Exorcist?
yeah, The
Oh,
Exorcist,
okay.
yeah. So this was a fun watch.
How did you like
Definitely
it?
ahead of its time.
How did you
I
like
have a lot of
it?
thoughts about it. I need to unpack it to really
Okay.
figure out how I feel. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do some. It's a tradition here on Gore Friends to do some would you rather questions, and we have a
Okay.
guest. So I came up with a couple on my own. I think Mars would be so proud of me. So I would like to know, would you rather perform an exorcism or stay in Hill House for a year?
Wow, a year.
A year.
I
A
think
year
I'd
in
rather just
Hill
perform the
House.
exorcism because, it might go a day or so and then I'm done. At the Hill
Okay.
House, I don't know if I'll make it a whole year, I'll probably
Fair
like
enough. Fair enough. I feel like my logic was the exorcism might be more traumatizing and
Oh,
more of a
okay.
life or death situation. But yeah, that's true. That's very true. I don't know. Both
Well,
situations are pretty rough.
Well, the Hill House could be just as traumatizing, I would feel like, except you have a whole year to go, you know. Yep. So yeah, I think I'd rather perform an exorcism and see if I can do it.
All right, fair enough. And then there's one that Mars actually came up with that I thought was really interesting. And she asks, would you rather deal with Freddy Krueger or the thing from It Follows? Which both can kind of affect your sleep in a way.
The thing from It Follows? Freddy Krueger.
Okay. That's a difficult one for me because both of them seem like a dead end, but at least we know that Freddy can be defeated, right? Nobody ever beat whatever sex demon is in It Follows.
I feel like just Freddy's more fun. He's just more of he has a charisma, I guess.
So. He does. He has a lot of charisma while killing people.
While killing people. Yes, he does. A lot of good one-liners, for sure.
Yeah. That was another movie that I hadn't watched in a really long time that we revisited last season.
Oh, so Nightmare
that's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. And one more from me. Would you rather deal with zombies or vampires?
I think vampires, because you know, zombies, you can't have a conversation with them. They're just there to eat your flesh and kill you. And these vampires, you could probably live amongst them. And we're probably living amongst vampires now already. So
that's vampires. True. We can coexist because they need food.
And they're charming too. So
they are. They
charm goes a long way with me.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Freddy, vampires. Yes. I see the pattern. Yes. I see it. Cool beans. So to get back into The Exorcist, I'm just going to give our audience a little background in case you guys have never seen it, never heard of it. I got you. Don't worry. So it was directed by William Friedkin, written by William Peter Blatty. Came out in 1973. It's an R-rated 2-hour and 2-minute film. It's starring Ellen Burstyn as Chris, Linda Blair as Reagan, Jason Miller as Father Damien Karras. We have Max von Sydow as Father Marin, and my honorable mention, Kitty Nguyen as Sharon, who I think did a very spectacular job and did not need to be there, really. She had no reason to stay in that house throughout the movie, in my opinion. So she deserved to be mentioned for her ride-or-die-ness. So let's dive into funny, cool, scary, guys. What did you find funny, if you found anything funny about very serious movie?
Well, what's funny is that people think it's funny now because they saw all the brothers, the Wayans brothers, that did a scary movie.
Yeah.
And then so like the generation, like my daughter, like anybody that grew up as a teenager watching the scary movie, when those come out in the 90s, late 90s.
Yeah.
I can't remember. But then they go back and watch the original. They're like, oh, it's just like Scary Movie. It's just funny. I'm like, no, that's like, see, they ruined it. Like, you guys ruined it. For you know, the way the seriousness of The Exorcist was. So, but as far as the movie being anything funny, I mean now it looks a little cheesy when she turns her head.
Yeah,
like that, you know, it looks, I mean, back then they used practical effects, they didn't use,
I love practical effects,
I do too. And so that was like, you know, a dummy, a real life doll that they built that was going to twist the head. And I thought that was just, it looked just like her. So if you see the two photos together of Linda Blair and the doll that they made that were going to turn the head, it's identical. So very talented crew, the makeup, it all looked great. But yeah, it does look a little cheesy, but hey, you know what? It was 1973. That was the effects we had back then. We didn't rely on software and computer stuff back then.
Yeah. And those effects still hold up today as probably the most iconic horror movie special effects to this day.
I think so too. Like, now when you see it, I think in HD or 4K. I don't remember, but if you watch The Exorcist now, I think on Blu-ray or whatever, mm-hmm. you can now see the strings that are lifting up Linda Blair when she's levitating off the bed. You now see it because it's so clear now.
Yeah. I don't think cameras are ever meant to be that advanced.
No.
We can't hide our fun.
And they couldn't mask stuff. And they couldn't mask that out in any software that they had back then either. So
yeah. Wow. A lot of little fun facts there.
Yes.
I did laugh at a couple of things, not because the movie had a funny tone or anything like that. I'm just really immature and tend to laugh at little things that probably aren't meant to be funny. It's just my way of enjoying horror movies. But the very beginning, we're taken out into the middle of the desert, and we see a bunch of dudes with guns, and it looks like they're about to do some serious damage to Father Marin, and then they just kind of look at him and walk away. And I just thought that moment of silence is just a little awkward.
Oh, okay.
And
I don't remember that.
Yeah. And then it's both funny but cool. The waving statue in the middle of the desert. They do a callback to it later in the movie, where I noticed Reagan's arm was just kind of stuck in like almost a waving hand position, just like the statue. So I saw like the need for it, but without any context, you're just kind of thrown in the very beginning in the desert and not knowing what's going on, what's the meaning of the statue and everything. And then you're just kind of piecing it together later.
Yeah.
And then Chris was complaining about the noises she was hearing in the attic, and she was claiming that they were rats.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after being told that the attic was clean, she proclaimed that they were clean rats. And I'm like, what are clean rats? I'd never heard of that. I don't think there are rats in your attic, Chris. I think your attic is haunted. She has a couple of moments where she just go off and cuss people out because she's had it up to here. And I think that's great, especially in 1973. We didn't get a lot of profanity in movies that were made back then. So this movie swung that door all the way open, and she went off on the phone operator for not connecting her to her ex-husband's hotel. And I thought that was pretty funny. She also goes off on the doctors later on because they start, you know, coming up with more excuses for what could be wrong with Reagan. Mm-hmm. And she just starts cussing them out at that point because it's like, if you guys don't know, just say you don't know. The doctors, for whatever reason, were just so adamant about, you know, sticking a diagnosis onto this girl. That made zero sense. Just hearing them talk about, oh, there's something about the chemical and an electrical function in her brain that's off, and it's happening in the frontal lobe, and that means that this is happening. It just made no sense. Like, if you play it back, they're really just talking nonsense. They sound like they found a bunch of web and bee stuff, and they're just trying to regurgitate it. So if you guys ever want to go back and watch that scene, I highly recommend it, or any of the scenes with the doctors. Just kind of made me laugh a little bit. But yeah, that's all that I'm pretty sure that's all that I found funny. I know I had a lot of them.
That was
in
more
there.
Than me.
I'm pretty immature about things. Oh, and the part where she like interrupted the party to pee on the floor and be disrespectful. I thought that was pretty funny just because, you know, there's just, you know, all these rich people gathered having a good time, kids in bed, and they're just getting dressed up to sit in a living room and sing over piano. And their party was interrupted by a demon possessed little girl that just insults them and pee on the floor. So I thought that was pretty random.
That's actually because Pazuzu is a demon that is a disgusting demon and does, it's one of the more sick demons that does stuff like that. It pees, it throws up. It's just a that's the Pazuzu is a demon. That's what it is. Like it's supposed to be like disgusting.
Just gross.
Yeah, just gross.
Gross things.
Straight out.
Anything
gross.
That's gross. Got it.
Yeah.
And that helps push the envelope on a lot of things, censorship wise, I think, that were happening back then, because a lot of what took place in this movie hadn't been done before.
Yeah,
in,
you're right.
In film yet. So I thought that it was cool at the same time, coming in blind and not really knowing why all these things are happening in the very beginning. I was just like, okay, this is kind of fun. This is a fun movie.
Yeah.
What did you find cool about the movie? I know there's probably a lot.
There's a lot, yeah. I mean, I actually like the color tones that the colorist did for the movie, because they added a very gritty, sort of like an East Coast type of, but dark tone to the whole movie, especially the parts where the nighttime scenes, when the doctor shows up, you know, it's the cover of the DVD and the posters. I mean, just him pulling up to the house, getting out, that whole scene, the way it was lit up, it's just, I always study that, because it's like, I want to see where the lights were coming from. So I look for stuff like that, like the lighting, the mood, and how they created mood using lighting, using color tones. This, like I said, we've talked about this earlier, the special effects that they had, I thought were awesome for not having CGI, having computer software where you can just add all that stuff. You can add the throw up. They use all, I wish people would still do that, and directors still do. I mean, I have to kind of like go back to practical effects myself, because I don't have a budget either for some of my photo shoots, but having them do that, I think that was pretty cool. I thought Linda Blair's character, from being an innocent child from the very beginning, the way she transitions into being possessed, it's just some of the best acting I've ever seen. Just the way she handled that and how she slowly moved right into that darker demon that was inside of her. It's just great. Like, that's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's just opens up. It just, the whole movie unfolds that way. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I can think of what I liked about the movie. And, you know, the director, I know, was a little crazy. I don't know about some of his antics of how he got some of the reactions and how he directed the movie. And that I don't really think is cool. But hey, he did it for the art of it. I understand that. But you also got to keep people's safety as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Reminds me a little of Kubrick with the crazy antics to kind of get actors to where they need to be, or it's a lot.
I think Linda Blair still has back issues from when they the director said that, you know, they were practicing her pulling into, or no, I think it was the mom, but Linda Blair does have back issues from that movie too. But
wow,
originally I think she got pushed against the wall with the dresser. And so they were pulling her from a piece of like a rope or something, the pulley that they were just pulling her, and they were practicing it, and wasn't supposed to be as hard as it was supposed to be. And you see that she's actually in severe pain when she hits the floor, because the director had said, this time I want you to do it 10 times harder.
Wow.
And she was not expecting it. And so that reaction you got is actually a real reaction. It's not like, it's not acting. So he did the stuff like that where it was like, you know, he's going a little too far and hurting people.
Wow. Yeah, that's wild. I didn't actually know all of those things.
Oh yeah.
That happened on set. So this is why I love talking about horror movies on a podcast, because I always learn new things, and it goes beyond just enjoying the movie. It's appreciating the art that went into it, but also all the crazy antics and stories that happen and, you know, behind the scenes during production.
Yeah, for sure.
For me, I'd really like to note the score for the movie. I think Mars would agree that the score is just really good. Like, I would... Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, look it up on Spotify and add it to a playlist. It's definitely noteworthy. definitely iconic. I can see why this movie has the reputation that it does, just throughout, past, you know, the special effects and, you know, it being a movie about an exorcism in the early 70s. It's a trailblazer of a movie in its own right, and it's a classic in its own right. I also want to note the sound design. It was very crisp and loud, and I wasn't expecting that. A lot of it was very immersive. I can only imagine watching it in a theater because it was like blaring from my TV. I'm like, wow, okay. So they didn't hold back on the audio, even given the time. It was very crisp, very loud. And I wasn't expecting it, but I appreciated it. Also, I like the backstory that they gave to Damien because it kind of... It's like they give you two stories in one. Like they could have simply followed Chris and Reagan and then brought the father in later, but his story was just as important in order to tie into the ending of the movie, I feel. I like that he was just all the little scenes of him being kind of haunted by his mother and her death, the dream that he had where, you know, at one point I thought maybe the sound stopped working because he couldn't hear anything. His mother was just mouthing words to him. And I thought that was just really haunting. And it just kind of stays with you seeing her walk down into that subway station, which I thought was also a really cool metaphor for what was going on in the movie at the time, having her descend into an unknown place because you have no idea where she's going. She's just going downward and she doesn't, you know, look quite the same. You can tell something's a little off about her. So I thought that was really neat. And the fact that they had a priest named Damien, it's like, why not?
I know, right?
Why not? He's also a boxer. So I feel like he's just a badass for no reason. I would actually put him on my thug list for... the purpose of him having taken a demon into his own body and then flinging himself out of a window. And we got to see how that long staircase came into play that they kept showing us throughout the movie. I kept thinking, okay, something's going to happen on these stairs because they keep giving us long shots of these stairs. Yeah. So I thought that was cool that it came full circle. And again, Reagan's raised hand kind of mocking the statue that was in the desert. And it was just stuck that way for a bit. I thought that was a neat callback to show, okay, something demonic is happening. Something that's violent and aggressive is taking place in this little girl's body. What did you find scary?
You mean like one scene that was really scary?
Yeah, one scene or multiple, anything that really stuck out to you
I think for me, it's like when he's talking to the demon, at one point he tries putting the holy water on the demon. And just that whole scene of, you know, it burns. And I just think that all that, anything in that bedroom scene is just completely scary to me. And
yeah.
Especially the levitation, like once the bed started shaking and they're all both looking at each other like, what the hell's going on? And then all of a sudden Reagan's eyes just go to the back of her head and just starts levitating. That is just cinema classic, scary as hell. So I thought that was one of the scary parts. And you know, when I watched the original version of the movie, because they didn't put this scene for many years, is when she's walking backwards on the stairs like a spider. Mm-hmm. It's a famous scene now, but it was actually originally cut out of the movie. And so that was never in there. I don't know when they put it back in. It's probably when DVDs were coming out with extended versions. So once they put that part in there, I couldn't wait to see it because they said there was a scene there where they took out. I've always heard about this scene. Growing up as a kid, that they took out this spider scene. I go, what do you mean a spider scene? Like she turns into a spider? That's weird. That's crazy. But no, it was actually that she was walking back like up, down the stairs like a spider. And you know, yeah, it looks cheesy now when you see it. You could tell it's like on hydraulics or whatever. But, and then, you know, the throw up that comes out, you know, screams. I thought that was just, that's actually a good scary scene now, but it originally wasn't in the movie. They actually cut that out, but I'm glad it's there now. I'm glad they restored it and they put that in there.
Wow. I had no idea. That's that's awesome. Very scary indeed. I do want to add to that. There are a couple of scenes that I found scary that had nothing quite to do with the possession. For instance, the hospital scenes, all the needles, all the poking and prodding and shooting blood out of the tube. A lot of that was just so unnecessary, putting this little girl through that. Oh,
traumatizing.
Very traumatizing. Yeah. And I just found myself asking, what are the needles for? Like, is the blood necessary? Why is all this so necessary?
They couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. Like, they're like, they couldn't figure out because it's not nothing. Yeah. They're ever going to figure out that she's possessed. And that's why, like, slowly and surely it was happening, and they couldn't make heads or tails. So they were trying everything. They were throwing everything at it, seeing what works, but seeing maybe she was crazy, you know? So, but yeah, that was traumatizing for her for sure.
Yeah. I feel if anything that made the possession worse.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. That was very,
that's true. I guess I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. They kept showing a lot of close-up shots of them, you know, inserting the needles. And I thought at any moment, this girl is probably going to attack them like a virus. Also, I know this scene is probably famous now, but like the crotch stabbing and the blood. And wow, that the pain that I just kept thinking when she wakes up out of this, she's going to need so much medical care.
Right, I know, because she's abusing the vessel that she's in. You know,
the
Zuzu is just abusing the body, you know, that she's in. But yeah, that's true. That was a very satanic scene, by the way. That was so sick. Like in 1973, like the fact that that's in the movie, I think that's why people were leaving the movie theaters and screaming and shaking because of scenes like that. Nobody's ever seen anything like that, you know?
Yeah, and even earlier on, just having her, you know, having a little girl use so much profanity on camera as well, earlier on in the possession, I was like, oh, so that's where this is going. Mm-hmm. So I could already immediately see how, you know, back then people would be like, okay, this movie is just outrageous. they definitely earned their R rating, I'll say that.
Oh, yeah.
But probably the scariest part for me was just, you know, Damien kind of walking back into the bedroom and looking at Father Marin laying on the bed dead on top of the Bible with and having the shot of the holy water on the floor just kind of dripping out of the bottle. And it felt like a very helpless scene. It felt like, you know, all hope was lost and there's nothing left to do but to, you know, at that point, I felt like he accepted his own death. And that was just really scary, you know.
And you see the expression on Reagan's face. All those expressions were just fantastic. It's like, it's the reactions I wasn't expecting. Yeah. I still, even when I see it now, when I see that reaction from like, almost like shocked, but then happy at the same time. I'm like, how did Linda Blair manage to just do that? Like, and do it so well, you know, cause it's just a reaction that I did not expect, you know, I didn't expect that at all.
There was almost a sense of pride in it. Like, look what I did. And just like letting him look at her work and she just like admired it. Like, wow, look, I killed him. Look.
Yeah,
it's okay, you can look. Like she didn't attack Damien at that point. She didn't, you know, she just quietly sat there and let him observe and take it all in. And I feel like that's the cruelest thing of all, is to just let him appreciate her cruelty. Yeah, so definitely a lot of scares in this movie, a lot of traumatic scenes for sure. If you're not into body horror, it might not be the movie for you. But that being said, let's get into the acting and visuals a little more. We've been touching on the practical effects, and you know, you just mentioned Linda Blair's facial expressions throughout the movie that I think were also very notable. But was there anything else in particular that really stood out to you acting wise?
Actually, I'm trying to think which priest was not an actor, is an actual priest. Mm. I'm trying to think if it was, I think the younger guy that was outside.
Oh, and, okay, yeah.
And he has the dead body. I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember what it was. But anyways, that guy is not an actor. He's a real life priest. And they got him for the movie for who knows what, for maybe like, you know, to see how it would work with an actual priest there. But yeah, I thought he did a great job. And this is, again, going
Father
back to
Father Dyer, played by William O'Malley, who is Reverend William O'Malley.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the director, going back to him, William Friedkin, he slapped him in the face before he did that take when he's crying. And if you see his hands shaking, he's shaking from anger because the director had just slapped him right before he yelled
action.
So I thought that was kind of a crazy thing to do, but the guy, for not being an actor, I thought, did a great job. And everybody in the movie is fantastic, especially of course Linda Blair, who, like you said, was just like a little girl. And what an amazing job she did going up against all these actors and the director and portraying two different types of characters, you know, the mom as well. You know, she was really fantastic. Father Damien was, for me, probably the more skilled actor there, because I really love the way he portrayed his character in such a subtle way.
Yeah.
But yeah, the acting was fantastic with everybody. You know, and props to the director too, even though he did crazy stuff. He brought all that great acting out of everybody. You know, he's to be credited too.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually went and take this time to note the fashion in the movie. Mm-hmm. I thought the wardrobe was just spectacular. And Chris donned some amazing outfits, Ellen Burstyn, from beginning to end, despite what was going on. I really appreciated the wardrobe.
Yeah, that's true.
And also the set design, subtle things like the dust on the furniture at Damien's mother's house, just kind of showing that she's not able to keep up with herself and her place. And, you know, she's there alone and she doesn't have help. Little shots like that, and then him kind of leaving her sitting in her chair instead of helping her to bed was a very interesting character development for me, because it tells me what kind of person he is. And as much as he loves his mother, he's just not there for her in the way that she needs someone that can take care of her, and he's not willing to do what he needs to do to take care of her. Probably by no fault of his own, he has his own life to live and he does worry for her, but there are just certain things that he could do that he hasn't done, boxing being one of them. He walked away from a boxing career and it seems like he was really good at it and could have, you know, had a better life for himself and his mother, but he chose the church instead. So he's just been living with that decision. It seems like there's a lot of regret that he carries with it. Also, Ellen Burstyn's acting, going from being afraid and, you know, hysterical to, again, like cussing people out. And, you know, she had to have that backbone as a single mom in the early 70s to stick up for herself and her child. And so I appreciated that they made her such a strong character, but also she was still, you know, she still had that emotional range to be afraid of what was happening and, you know, kind of showing her at her wit's end and not knowing what to do and needing that help in the end from two men that were both flawed in their own ways. So I really like the character development and how the actors are able to portray everything that their characters are going through.
Yeah, I agree with all that.
Yeah. Let's get into the F-ups. Where did the characters F up that it could have saved them some trouble, essentially?
Well, I guess you got to go back to the beginning when they find that statue.
Yeah.
And I think maybe you touched on something really good. Maybe all the doctor's appointments that Reagan was going to, maybe it was actually aggravating the demon to want to do more. I never really thought about that part. You know, I just figured the possession's coming and she's going to be fully on possessed. But maybe, maybe it was unpreventable, because that's the scary part about it, is that there was no preventing this thing that was going to happen. And that's what makes the movie scary. You know, it can happen to anybody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely say that the Ouija board was a huge catalyst. I feel that Reagan playing with the Ouija board definitely made her an open gate to be the vessel. I like that, you know, when she first pulled the Ouija board out, her mom was like, "Oh, what's this? Show me how you play with it." They never actually showed her mom using the Ouija board or touching the Ouija board. It was all Reagan playing with it and touching it and asking the questions on her own, showing that she could be the only possible vessel because she opened that doorway for herself by trying to make contact with, you know, entities that were in or around the home. So I liked that touch. However, that was a huge F up. I feel like she wouldn't have gotten possessed. It could have happened to someone else, or, you know, maybe the demon would have just taken up residence in the house, but perhaps it would have saved her from possession. I also noticed Chris going into the attic alone at night. That wasn't the wisest decision, in my opinion. You hear a lot of strange noises in the house. Maybe, you know, call someone for backup. They did have staff that lived in the house as well. And then when the bed started shaking, Chris kind of just jumped on top of the bed instead of removing Reagan from the bed. I thought that was an interesting choice as well, to just
jump on the bed
and just go through it with her instead of pulling her away from the danger. She just jumped into it. And
I always felt there. That's because she jumped on there to add weight to the movement and try to, like, and it's also like a shield. Like, she was trying to shield her as well. I felt like it was like that too, but yeah, I would have, like, get out of the bed, you know.
Yeah, I would have left the room, like, okay, come with me, we're leaving the room. Why just lay on the bed with her? So that was interesting, because throughout the movie I feel like Reagan needed a change of environment for the kind of life that she wanted. They weren't from Washington, they're from LA, and, you know, she kind of wanted to go home, and Chris was just kind of stalling, taking her home because she just went through a divorce, and Reagan wanted a pet horse. And, you know, there are things that Reagan couldn't do because of where they were. And I feel like that just added to Chris keeping her in places where she didn't need to be. She had no business being in Washington. She was just there because her mom was shooting a movie. So I feel like it kind of goes back to her not always making the best decisions, maybe, when it came to location and, you know, how to go about bringing up her daughter now with this new change in their lives.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's part of it, though. I mean, you have to live with your decisions.
Yeah.
And hope that you don't get possessed.
Yeah, you just gotta hope. that, you know, your temporary housing situation doesn't cause the demonic possession. But yeah, I think that was most of my F-ups. Aside from her taking Reagan to the doctor for the bed shaking.
Yeah.
I don't understand what she was expecting the doctors to say at that point. She was just saying the bed was shaking. And of course, they're going to say, oh, she was probably having a seizure.
Yeah.
That's the only logical explanation. But there wasn't anything health-wise wrong with her. So I was a bit confused as to why she chose to take her to the doctor because the bed was shaking. So I feel like there's a little bit of denial going on with Chris, with, you know, from the sounds in the attic to the bed shaking and, you know, all the increasing activity that was happening in the house. Taking your kid to the doctor isn't going to stop that, probably.
Yeah.
So we're kind of reaching the tail end of our segments, but what do you think makes this? I mean, I know it seems like a silly question with this being such a classic, but we always ask what makes this a horror movie and what are the themes?
Well, the themes obviously possession from a demon. So mm-hmm. that already for me qualifies as a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because of this scary thing of being possessed and having a lot of like lead ups, like the movie leads up to intense scenes, one to the next. And that's great classic horror stuff that leads you into a place where you don't really want to go, but you're going, you have no choice. You're going that way, no matter what. You're going to a darker tone because you notice in the beginning, it's all lighthearted, you know, they're having fun. And then it slowly starts to shift to where it gets really dark and really satanic, you know? So, mm-hmm. so for me, that's qualifies it as a horror movie, but it's a classic horror movie because it's not like the ones that came out in the 80s, that the slasher ones,
yeah,
which are horror movies too, but, and they have their own stories, but the fact that this was done in a different way in the early 70s kind of paved the way for how you could tell a good scary story.
Definitely, definitely. For me, I feel that I agree, of course, on everything that makes this a horror movie. I mean, it's a horror movie through and through. It's a true horror movie, you guys. From the body horror, the possession, there's plenty of blood and death to go around for this movie.
Yes.
So watch it with caution. But also for a theme, I feel like the biggest theme of this movie is faith, ironically.
Yeah.
I feel that a lot of this was Father Damien being tested. He expressed his lack of faith early on in the movie, and he felt that he was losing faith or his faith was wavering. And I feel like this possession and the exorcism was a test of his faith. And it was all leading up to this, him having a strong enough body to hold a demon and then fling himself out of a window. Yeah. I feel like all of this was done for a reason. So I thought that was a really cool sense of irony to have for a possession movie, is having faith for a priest as that. What was your relationship status to the movie? So our relationship statuses are how we rate the movies on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10. 1 or 0 can be like a hit it and quit it, and a 10 can be put a ring on it. And you can get creative for anything that you find in the middle, but I think I know what your answer will be.
It's going to be 11 as far as the rating. It's just for me, it taps into something where, like I said, this is something that could actually happen in real life. This is why I don't mess with the Ouija board ever. Mm-hmm. I believe in portals, and I believe in, like, if you mess with things, you know, it might attach to you. So the fact that this isn't even a ghost story, it's just a demon. makes it even more frightening because it's not a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not somebody that lived once and died and it's a ghost. It's something that's not from this world, you know, and you don't know what it's capable of doing. And that's what makes this movie really horrifying and scary. And like I said, don't watch Scary Movie, the Wayans Brothers one. Watch The Exorcist first. Then you can watch that one. I didn't even bother watching those other movies. And then any movies that they made after that, like The Exorcist, like Exorcist 2 and 3, everyone's tried doing a reboot of The Exorcist. And you just cannot touch it.
I think the shock factor isn't there. I think that's what made this movie as great as it was, is the shock factor, because there wasn't anything like it yet. And it was the first movie to do all of these things. So there's just a different appreciation that comes with watching it, as opposed to, you know, seeing people imitate that. And I feel like even today, possession movies don't perform as well rating wise because it's been done before and it's not shocking anymore. There's nothing you can do in a possession movie that will surprise someone now, because this movie did all of it, and there have been movies since that have done a lot of those things too. So
like The Exorcism of Emily Rose. I think they actually did a prequel of The Exorcist, which I did watch at the movie theater, of like a backstory of I'm trying to remember what the father's name was, but it was when he was young, and it has to do with the Pazuzu statue as well. But I don't know. It was okay. It has a cool backstory, but you know, it wasn't going to like be as great as The Exorcist. And then, you know, I just hope they don't remake The Exorcist. You know, I know they tried dabbling in, like, it's a different Exorcist type of movie. It's this possession of this boy or whatever it is.
But it's been done so much. Yeah,
but they reboot everything. You know, they rebooted Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street. They tried doing that with that other actor, and it just didn't work. You know, it just was not the same. You need Robert Englund. It's a classic. Robert Englund is still with us. And he could act in it. Like, why did you have to get a new Freddy Krueger? So same with The Exorcist. Like, I wouldn't want them to cast another Reagan or anything like that and try to recapture the magic, because the magic already happened. You can't do it. You gotta come up with your own story, different version, something different than what they were doing, because that was the first movie that was like that. And so I think people just need to concentrate on doing an original content with an original movie and an original idea that they can do like how they did, and not just copy and paste. Just keep doing it again. Let's just try to make some money, you know?
For sure. Yeah, I agree with everything that you said there, especially about the reboots with Nightmare on Elm Street. I feel like the industry just pretends that movie doesn't exist now. But yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. As for me and my relationship status with this movie, it's not quite put a ring on it for me, just because it is very long and it's a very slow burn, and slow burns can be a hit or miss with me with my attention span. However, I do recognize it as a classic, and I have an appreciation for this movie. So it's not like I would never watch it again, but it is, you know, I feel like anything with demonology is pretty heavy, and it's not something that you want to take in a lot. Same with, you know, I mentioned earlier, Rosemary's Baby is very high on my list.
Oh yeah.
But it's not a movie that I can watch frequently because it's just so heavy, and it's that scary watching that situation unfold. So I would say this is like maybe a seasonal bay kind of movie, where maybe, you know, for the sake of it being October and, you know, the scary season, you might want to add it to your watch list of horror movies and maybe watch it like once a year. But it's not something that I can watch all the time or even like once a month.
Same here. Yeah. I try to watch it once a year or once every 2 years. Like, I'm due to watch it this year, Like I said, I watched it last October, but I try to watch it every year. And, you know, because I start to forget certain parts, like you started reminding me, because, you know, I don't watch it, like you said, like all the time. I mean, it's one of those things you throw on, you know, once in a while, once in a great while, you know, mm-hmm. not all the time. So I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't worry about not remembering, because at Gore Friends, we cheat and we watch movies and take notes. There and so we tend to forget a lot, but our notes remind us.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember from just memory, just from watching it so many times.
That's incredible.
Growing up, you know, watching it so many times, watching the documentary, how it's made. That's how I know all these little fun facts. And it's out there now. You can just go on YouTube and type in The Exorcist, and it'll give you like facts about it that you didn't know. But I did watch the documentary on the making of The Exorcist, and that was really interesting too. Just how they did all the practical effects, how they got the rights to make the movie, and how they shopped it around, and nobody wanted to touch it. You know, a lot of the movie companies passed on it. You know, which happens a lot everywhere. Some of the classics, you know, a lot of studios pass it up in the beginning. They don't just greenlight everything because they don't want to risk having a dud on their hands and get fired, you know, and lose their jobs.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for all that input. That wraps up our segment on The Exorcist. We will be right back after a brief ad with some businessy stuff, and we'll let you know all the places where you can find our special guest today, Raul of the Dead. Stay tuned, you guys. Hey, Gore Gang, this is Story, here to tell y'all about the Bearded Ladies Mystic Museum in Burbank. The Mystic Museum is home to a plethora of oddities, photo ops, uniquely licensed horror merch, and immersive exhibits. Word is, the exhibit area used to be a séance room, and employees told us that the place is haunted. Evil Dead is the theme of the current exhibit, and will remain so until the end of the year. Are you brave enough to enter? Follow the Bearded Ladies Mystic Museum on IG. Later, Gore Friends. Okay, Gore Friends. So we've made it to the end of our Exorcist episode. And since Mars isn't here, that means I have to do the businessy stuff. And you know, she always wants me to do it and I never do it. And now I have to because she isn't here. So you won this round, Mars. But next week, it's all you, buddy. All right. So, Gore Friends, we have a brand new website that is live. You can find it in our show notes, and you can also find it in our bio on Instagram. It has links to everywhere where you can find us, and you're actually able to chat with us directly through a chat box on our website. We have a little forum for you guys where we can interact with you, answer questions. And then that way, if you have a Sounds Like a Horror Movie, you don't have to email us. If you don't want us to have that information, you can just send us a little chat box. And we also have a newsletter coming out that I'll be writing up for you guys once a month. You can subscribe to that newsletter by inputting your email address. And I'll be sending out a newsletter at the end of each month, just letting you know what you missed and any new content that we're putting up on our Patreon in case you're not subscribed yet. It might give you that little extra push. You can also access our Patreon tiers through our website. So you don't have to make a Patreon if you don't want one. You can go on our website and choose to donate at a $1, $5, or $10 tier. We have extra content on our Patreon for you guys where we cover shows through GFTV. And we have more coming for you guys actually, because now we're doing video content as well that we'll be posting on social media, but we have a lot of extras that we want to share with you guys. So all of that will be going up on our Patreon. So you can find us on any of those mediums that I've mentioned earlier. And as always, stay gory, my friends, and Raul of the Dead. let everybody know where they can find you.
You can go to my website, rawlofthedeadphotography.com. I know it's kind of long, but if you want to save the trouble, just go to Instagram at rawlofthedead. It's R-A-W-L of the dead. And there you can find links to my website, to my YouTube channel. I also have a TikTok that I just started a few months ago, trying to be more active on that. It's also TikTok is at Roll of the Dead. And where else? That's it. YouTube is Roll of the Dead as well. And I'm trying to put more content on there. And I'm trying to do a lot more like mini movies that are like 3 to 5 minutes long. And I do have a re-edit of the Scream one that I did recently. So I just wanted to put it out there that, you know, that we did this homage to Scream. And so me and Brianna and her boyfriend, the three of us just did it on our own. But I was never happy with the way we couldn't get the voice of the ghost face guy. We could not figure it out. So anyways, since I put it out there on YouTube, I did hear from somebody. He goes by Pongo Joe on Instagram. And within 25 minutes, he goes, hey, can I redo that voice for you? Because it's one of my favorite movies and I have the effects for it. I go, dude, if you can do it, I would really appreciate it because I am not happy with the way the voice came out. I did it myself and I was like, it's okay. It's the closest thing I can get to the ghost face voice. And since it's like COVID, you know, I didn't want to share the little box thing that I had with me with anybody. I'd have to wipe it down. And it didn't really work. It was kind of crappy. So the guy, I came back that night, checked. I was thinking, you know, hopefully it's a little bit better than mine. And it was not just a little bit better. It was 10 times better. It was almost like the movie version. And so I go, dude, I have to put this out. I have to do a re-edit anyways, because there's a little bit of mistakes on them, which I mean, it's going to happen. You know, I don't have a crew. I'm the rigging guy, the lighting guy, the film guy, directing. So I was doing everything. And so was Bree. So was Mike. We're all trying to chip in. But anyways, that's coming out next Friday, I believe, the re-edit version on YouTube, if you want to tune into that one. And I have some more ideas and more like miniature movies that I'm going to work on the next few months, as well as another Roll of the Dead magazine. We are on, I can't remember how many issues I have. I think I have three or four issues, but I'm getting confused only because we're running right into the next one, right back to back. So we're going to try to get a Halloween edition right before Halloween. So, but for me, it's Halloween all year long. So even when Halloween's over, I'm still going to have the magazine out there with horror stuff, gothy stuff, dark stuff, because it's just like that for me all the time. So I don't just do this for Halloween. It just gets a little more intensified during Halloween.
That's very exciting.
So yeah,
I'll have Roll to check out that magazine.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it.
Everyone for listening and hanging in there while we had our season break. And we are so excited for all the new exciting things that we're bringing to you guys. We hope to see you soon at a convention once conventions are back up and running. And we love you guys. Thank you so much, Gore Gang. Until next time, bye.